This is the Fighting the Good Fight podcast, defending taxpayers and solving their tax problems with your host, Patricia Gentile. Patricia Gentile is a taxpayer defense attorney, CPA, the founder of New England Tax Relief, and Patricia L. Gentile Coaching. With 40 years of IRS expertise and experience, she has successfully defended and resolved difficult IRS situations for hundreds of taxpayers. Patricia coaches tax professionals to confidently identify their client's IRS problem and create a successful resolution plan for them. As a fierce advocate, a creative strategist, and solution finder, fighting the good fight with Patricia Gentile is both her passion and purpose.
Welcome, everyone, to the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Gentile. I have a wonderful guest today that I'm very excited about us all listening to, Mr. Leonard Green. He's the heart of the Green Group. And the Green Group is a highly regarded and recognized tax, accounting, and consulting firm across each of its niche areas, as well as in day-to-day tax and accounting practices. Their entrepreneurial expertise allows them to think critically and work with you to help their clients save money. If you go to their website, thegreengroup.com, I think it's greengroup.com. Maybe, yes, not thegreengroup.com. You will see the areas that they provide service in, including, you know, tax, accounting, but specialized areas that are necessary in being an entrepreneur in business, specialized businesses, including selling of thoroughbred horses. That's a specialized business in itself. So you have to go to that website to see the type of areas that they service. And they're also involved in tax controversy. So, you know, if I can call you Len, if that's okay. I have so much in common in my background with Len. I was born into an entrepreneurial family. I was told since I can remember that, you know, you get your education and you work in the area of your career. And after a certain amount of time, you go and, as it was said then, hang your own shingle, start your own business. And so that was always in my mindset and my goal that I would actually own my own business. The other thing is that I born and raised in the southern Adirondack Mountains area of upstate New York, and was just a drive away from Saratoga Springs, New York, and grew up with horse racing, thoroughbred, and the trotters in my backyard, including the summer after my freshman year of undergrad that I spent the summer there at the Saratoga State Park, waitressing at the Gideon Putnam Hotel, and waitressing and in the mornings doing breakfast and lunch during the day. And the trainers were of the horses, the thoroughbreds that they were running, or the trotters that were running, the trainers and the owners and everyone involved would come in for breakfast. And I used to hear the different things they were saying to each other. And one of the things I heard is them telling each other, yeah, he's not going to win. This is who's going to win today. And on the afternoon race at the, they called it the flat track with the thoroughbreds. And so that's when the kitchen, like the waitresses and the chefs, would send the busboy out to go over to the track and place their bets with their tips during the day. But Len and I, of course, are CPAs, and I'm also an attorney. And so the two professions combined for me are a passion of advocacy. I can advocate for startup businesses. I love when they are starting up and that I'm with them as they grow and prosper. It's a wonderful feeling. On the other hand, I can help taxpayers by resolve their tax problems and defend their rights. And once again, that's the title of this podcast, Fighting the Good Fight. So Len spent 5 years working with Deloitte Touche, which is one of the big eight accounting firms. I think they're now the big four, mergers over the decades. And he ended up staying there 5 years and then founded the Green Group in 1973. We're going to talk about when Len decided the next business to go in, and then the next business to go in, and the next enterprise, etc. He literally built an empire of over 35 companies, and we're only talking over a 50-year period. Quite successful. The entrepreneurial success he had led him to write the Entrepreneur's Playbook with more than 100 proven strategies and tips and techniques to build a radically successful business. I love that. I love that title. To build a radically successful business. That's powerful. I like that. I hear your mindset in that, Len. And Len owns one of the most successful thoroughbred racing operations in the world. The name is DJ Stable. What I also love, Len, before I let you talk, because I could talk about you all day, is that you also have a podcast called CEO Forum, Stadium to Boardroom, of which you will explain what is behind that, excuse me, because that's still on. And you also have, I noticed on your website, it's something called Green Group Cares. That was very powerful. That, you know, whether you're working in a local food bank or supporting a national walk or making monetary donations, you know, your philosophy on the Green Group Cares is that you feel every moment we give back positively affects others. So you're a philanthropist as well as an entrepreneur and very successful. So without any further ado, I want to introduce Len. And please feel free to start wherever you want about discussing getting into these different projects and businesses that you've been involved in.
And Patty, thank you, and John and Newsy, thank you for both being on the other side of the coin here. Let me start with the Green Group Cares. I really believe that it's essential for people who are successful to give back. So we give back 10% of our profits, okay, no matter what the company is, okay, to charity. And for instance, one of the events that we did was for the New York backside, okay, that backside being the part where the workers live and work and their families kind of thing. And the New York Chaplaincy runs an event every year to raise funds to give them food and summer camps and all that wonderful things. And they honored me last summer. And I said to Humberto Chavez, who was the head man, I said, how much is budgeted? They said $100,000 to raise. I said, and what's the most they've ever raised? And they said, well, $200,000. And I said, then what happens if we raised $400,000? He says, well, we could add more food. We could add more backpacks. We could send more people to summer camps. I said, then I'll accept your honoree as long as the goal is $400,000.
Excellent.
So we made the 4,000, and the chaplain said to me, you know, when he had the microphone, how did you do that? And I said, it was very easy. I called all my clients and told them I was going to turn them into the IRS unless they contributed. But the funny thing now, just stay with this for a second. You see, I don't know if you believe in this or not. I'm not asking, Patty, that you or your listeners believe in it. I believe in it because I was last week down at the Tampa, Oaks, which is a big race down in Tampa, Florida. And we were fortunate enough to win it, okay? And the announcer was the same announcer who was the person who was at the Saratoga event. And he said, Len Green's horse just won, and he's a great philanderer. And then maybe that is part of the luck that you need. And I honestly believe in that.
Okay? Right.
And then again, 10% of the money that we won down there, I think it was a $200,000 race, is being contributed to charity. One goes back and forth with the other. You also mentioned the CEO forum. There's a great entrepreneur called Robert Reese who actually runs that show and runs the forum. And John, has had the major challenge is working with Robert, because Robert is a very difficult person, very exacting, very smart. So again, I got introduced to John through Robert, and then we came up with this idea of from the stadium to the boardroom, because it's fascinating to interview athletes, to see what made them later on successful in the business world, because so many of them fail. So many of them are there just because of their name, but don't do anything else. And so it really is, and then you flip back to people who are successful. Are you successful because you hire some of these celebrities to do your advertising, or are you smart enough, to hire them and give them a percentage of the company so that they feel it's part of their company, they're just not a salesman, So again, all different ways of looking at things, the difference between successful and not successful is sometimes just these little things that you do differently than other people. So it's not enough to have just an idea. You got to have an idea and then step back and say, how do I find out whether, for instance, when you walk down the aisle of a supermarket and you see certain products and you recognize those products and you say, hey, how did they get into the supermarket? How did they get into the aisle level? What did they pay to do that? What's on the bottom shelf or the top shelf? And you say, what could they do differently so that they got into a better position to be successful? And there's so many people out there, who could be very, very successful, and they see that there's a problem. Well, then the next step is finding a solution to the problem. This book of mine, The Entrepreneur's Playbook, I was just starting to tell you before that I went to a session at Babson, which I never heard of before, and I applied for a job teaching there, and one of the obstacles was I'd never written anything, which I thought nothing about it, and I signed up. I was a 252nd person on the waiting list in June, and I forgot all about it until September, and I got a call from Babson saying, are you still interested in teaching? I said, come on. Well, it turned out that one of the teachers went on maternity leave with 2 days before school started, and they went down the list, and everybody else ahead of me was a teacher, and they had a job. And there I was, because I wasn't a teacher, I just ran a large number of companies, that I was available. But you put yourself in a position to have luck run over you, which is very, very important. Now, fast forward, because Lenny Green is not the easiest guy to work with, and doesn't necessarily follow rules, because that's what entrepreneurs do. They make their own rules. Okay, I sure enough got in trouble with Babson, and they said to me, "You know, we're going to have to fire you because you've." They couldn't say why, so they said, "Because you've never written anything, and a teacher has to write certain things and to get it published." And I said,
Right.
"I'm not writing a paper. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write a book." I said, "Great, but you have a month.
Right.
You have a month to write the book." I said, "Great, easiest thing in the world. I have very, very successful clients. Why? Because I find solutions for them and make them not just add numbers up like a bean counter. Okay, we actually find solutions for people." And of course, we know the tax law so well because we specialize in it that it's, for instance, we have 800 clients in the horse business. Why? Because 80% of the people in the horse business lose money. And 100% of the CPAs, or 99% of the CPAs, don't know how to make money in the horse business because it's very specialized. But since we have 200 horses of our own and we've won 2,600 races, we know the horse business pretty well, kind of thing. So again, blah, 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 blah. The important thing is that people come to us for solutions, not to add up numbers and do things. And that's the niche difference.
I agree with that. That's definitely the niche difference. A lot of our clients, especially this time of year in tax season, are just showing up going, "I hate this. I have to give you the information. Just give me the bottom line. How much do I owe?" And then they're doing business as usual. We're into the new year. The taxes that we do is a picture of the year that's already ended. It's just a picture of it. It's so what are they going to do differently for themselves if they're not really, if it's like business as usual and it's not right, the growth aspect of it. And you're talking about, I didn't know that statistic about the horse racing business. That I didn't know that at all. It almost sounds to me like what I've heard about owning like a NASCAR team.
Yeah.
That it's the same type of thing that you really don't, they really don't make a lot of money, or they might not even make a profit. But so if you're
Let's stay
providing solutions,
there for a second. Okay.
yeah.
One of the people that we had on the CEO forum was Andrea. Okay.
Oh,
And
Mario
Mario.
Andretti?
Yeah. And
Yeah.
so I said to him, "What is the difference between you and most of the other drivers?" He said, "I was a driver just like they were." But then I said to
Right.
myself, "How am I going to make some money in this business?" So
Right.
I followed the people who were the successful people beforehand, okay, who they got as sponsors, how they got them as sponsors, kind of thing. And then I followed the pattern that they have. Everything has patterns. Let me just go one back, step back. How did I write the book? Okay, the Entrepreneur's Playbook. Well, all I had was 30 days. I sat down and I took the 100 most successful clients that I had, and I dropped them a line saying, "You can do me a favor. Okay, I have to write a book in 30 days, but you tell me one of the secrets to your success." Now, okay, 100 people I sent letters to. You think maybe 5 or 10 or 15
All right.
remember? 90 replies. 90 replies. Because people want to tell people what they did differently and how they did it. And to me, that's the greatest compliment in the world, okay? Because people want to talk to you. They want to tell you their successes. Next step is to listen. Good.
Yes, because I've heard it said that success provides clues, and that's what you're talking about. Follow the clues. And if you model what somebody else has done, how can you not step into the level of success that they have? What they've done for you is close that gap between where they where you are and where you want to be. They've closed the gap because they're sharing their experience. They're sharing, you know, like you said, the ups and the downs and the ins and the outs. They're sharing that with you. Boy, if somebody, like, they're practically mentors, you know, your book is probably like a mentorship.
And Patty, fighting the good fight. If they would take the time, instead of doing something else for an hour, and listen, there are so many things that are coming up in these discussions that a light bulb is going to, the way I envision it is, there's a light bulb there for everybody, except it's not connected. And if you can just twist the light bulb, and then suddenly it goes on, and they say, wait a second, I have an idea, and that could solve my challenge or problem, kind of thing. Or you're available, and I'm available if people want to drop a note to you and say, hey, here's my challenge. Okay, what do you think I should do? I don't charge for those things. I'm happy to see them. And I'm also happy to see the students, okay, write me and say, hey, I took some of the things that we did in class, okay, and I used it in real life. Okay, or I did a rocket pitch and I was able to get a job, or I was able to get into law school. Okay, it just, that really makes you feel good.
Well, this reminds me of mentioning here your course at Babson College in Massachusetts. It's the number one entrepreneurial college in the nation.
And now it's the number two best college, business college in the United States.
Oh, I love what Babson does. You teach a fall semester course called the Ultimate Entrepreneurial Challenge. So, right, tell us about what you do for the students in this course, or what do they have to do?
It's fascinating because it teaches me some real lessons in life. As I said, way back when, okay, I put myself on the waiting list, and it should never have happened that somebody went on maternity leave and then to be called up in September with 3 days before class started to be interviewed. And this is interesting for a second, Patty. Okay, I said, just give me the job. They said, no, you have to come for an interview. I said, okay, give me the first interview in the morning, and then you can cancel all the rest. They said, okay, if you can get up to Massachusetts at 9 o'clock, you can have the first interview. So I went down to the airport, okay, at 6 o'clock in the morning, fogged in.
Oh.
I didn't get up to Babson until 11:45 from my 9 o'clock appointment.
Oh.
And I say to the students, okay, what happens if you were exposed to that situation and you can't say, I'm sorry, we got fogged in, it's not my fault, blah, blah, blah. You can't make those excuses. What do you do?
Oh, I love that.
And the answer is walk in and say, I'm 15 minutes early for my 12 o'clock appointment. They said, no, you haven't. I said, let's not discuss it. I said, is the person who was interviewing me got 5 minutes? All right. Sure. So I walk into the office, and on the wall is a huge Jiffy Lube insignia. Now, here you are. You're walking in for interview, all you have is 5 minutes instead of a half an hour to sell yourself, and you see a Jiffy Lube insignia. And again, you'd say to yourself, well, you can either apologize for being late or you blah blah blah. The professor at that time was Steve Spinelli. I said, that is an interesting insignia.
All right.
Said, yeah, I'm one of the founders of Jiffy Lube.
Oh, wow.
I said, could you tell me what made you think about it? He says, yeah, I had my car and it was being changed the oil, and the guy was doing a lousy job. And I said, gee, if he could do it faster, quicker, it could be a big business. So I helped start Jiffy Lube.
Oh, with him? Yeah. Oh, he did that. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a knocking on the door after the because the next interviewer is coming in. Okay?
Right.
And I said, Steve, do you really enjoy doing this? Because he said, no. And I said, well, here's the proposition. If I don't, just give me the job. If I don't get the highest grades, don't pay me. He says, we'll try it. And I walk out and I say to the person, sorry, the job's been filled. And then I turn to the secretary and I say, what class is it? It was operations management, which I honestly
operations didn't. Management.
I don't know anything about it. So I went back in and said, can I change the course? He said, no, you got 3 days. And I said,
wow.
Well, I heard Donald Trump, okay, on The Apprentice. And
you're right.
Fascinating. So I'd like to call my class The Apprentice. Well, the legal people quickly jumped in and said, you can't.
Right,
so
right.
I said, okay, how about the ultimate challenge? They said, fine. We put it out on the lines. We had 3 days before class started. We had over 150 people wanted to switch into the ultimate challenge.
Really? Really?
Because a class in where you would be challenged like you've never challenged before.
Right.
No books, no tests, just challenges. And we're going to bring in three entrepreneurs, famous, successful. They're going to present their case studies, and you're going to have to see whether you could be more successful than they are, or how you can make their company more successful. Well, man,
oh, I love that.
Sure, that's what college is all about. That's why we come to Babson. So I'm not sure I'm the greatest teacher in the world, but I'm oversold within 5 minutes of my class being available each time.
And you were 252 at the bottom of the list.
And I get to meet so many famous, successful people, kind of thing. That okay. So again, I am blessed, Patty, in the sense that I don't think I work a day of my life. I have so many challenges. I have five Zooms or podcasts today. Okay. And some of them are really tough challenges as to what to do and not to do. This is an easy one because you and I are so easy to talk to each other, kind of thing. And I'm comfortable that way. Whenever I say John's going to make me look good. Right. So,
right.
But again, right. I think it's fascinating. I think if you can do things and have challenges, and then I don't know the answers, but I have so many networks and different ways of doing things. I have 2,000 former students on my LinkedIn with our deal being, I will answer your questions as long as you're available to help me if somebody needs advice in your field.
Oh, I love that. You're very reciprocal. You have this philosophy or belief of having working with people, as we call it, our network, but it's reciprocal. You're being very clear with people about here's the network and here's how it works. And,
yeah,
you know, who wouldn't jump on like that? Because nobody's talking money. Everybody's talking, exchanging information, experience, wisdom, knowledge. And that's how you get a group of passionate people, that they're passionate about what they do and they want to help each other. That's very powerful.
Okay. Imagine for a moment that you had a challenge and it involved a company that wanted to do the same thing as Home Depot, for instance. Okay.
Right.
Well, I'm in the Babson Hall of Fame. The founders of Home Depot are in the Babson Hall of Fame.
Right.
I go ahead and dial the number. Okay. Somebody answers and says, yes, you want to talk to Arthur Blank? Well, Arthur Blank is very, will you tell Mr. Blank that I'm in the Babson Hall of Fame with him? And I would love to ask him a 5-minute question. What do you think the chances are of me getting through?
He'll take your call, right? And you know, and that's what it is with a lot of people as alumni. You know, they've went to the same undergrad or the same law school, or you know, so they stay in touch with each other because, and what they have, like you said, in common is like being alumni. What you had in common with the gentleman of Home Depot was that you both were Hall of Famers on Babson College, you know, whatever, you were in that group. What I hear is that you look for the connection. You probably have connections everywhere because you're in so many different realms of business. You're with everywhere, from being an adjunct professor, that's your connection there, but then being a horse owner, that's and involved in the racing world.
Owning 30 pieces of real estate.
You're involved in real estate.
What? Businesses. You know, it's a wonderful thing. It really, really is.
If you were.
But you have to keep on giving back. Penny, I want to get across to the people who are listening that it's not a one-way street. That if you understand that you contribute to charities or you solve problems for other people, okay, then it comes back in tenfold.
I love that philosophy because it sounds like that's where you start from. You might have an idea and you enjoy being an entrepreneur and you enjoy being in business, but it sounds like you actually start from a point of how can we help each other? I'm looking to do this and you do this and how can we help each other? And then you've gained from that interaction, and hopefully they've gained from the interaction with you, and it just grows from there. And as they say, it's karma. The karma that you actually create keeps coming back around full circle.
Let me add one other thing to that, okay? Let's say that you have a tax. Somebody comes to you and they owe a lot of money in taxes, and you know that they owe a lot of money in taxes. It's clear that somebody made a mistake, okay? And they know it and you know it. A large percentage of the people in the attorneys or CPAs would say, okay, pay it, because that's the right thing to do. And you've never handled one of these things before. You didn't stop there. You actually found some books, research on how you can have a tax resolved, okay? You didn't have to do that. That's part of you, okay? That says, hey, let me see. And as you know, okay, an awful lot of tax returns and taxes that are owed can be resolved.
Right.
But there's a technique to be able to resolve it. Question is, do you say, I've never done it before, therefore I can't? Or did you went ahead and read a book or something on it? That's the difference.
Yeah, I had friends. This is how I got into the tax resolution work. I was CPA sitting there. I'm doing tax returns during tax season, and I like listening to talk radio. I was listening to Boston Talk Radio in the background, and I'm thinking in my mind, while I'm doing somebody else's returns and the talk radio show is on, I'm thinking, how can I help my friends who were being audited for 2 years of tax returns, and it was the Schedule C that was being audited? He was a independent carpet installer, and she was a hairdresser, and the two of them used to have a former revenue officer IRS revenue officer who was now for about 15 years with the service at the time, and this is in the early 90s, 1990s, who was doing tax returns. So he'd come to your house, and I don't know if you ever heard of the kitchen table accountant, right, who used to sit there and pencil out your return, write out your return. There was no software and tax preparation software, and he's sitting there, and he pencil out his client's returns, and then he'd, you know, he'd have them sign on the line, and there you go. Well, long story short, they were audited by the IRS because the IRS was actually doing what is called a tax preparer's audit, that they were auditing the clients of a specific tax preparer because there was a pattern in how he prepared his clients' returns, which were 99% self-employed persons who for some reason never paid tax. And I don't know how you can be in business, earn a profit, and not pay tax on that. And so everybody, I guess, had a loss. And my friends were audited for 2 years. And I'm sitting there doing somebody else's tax return in the middle of tax season, listening to talk radio. And all of a sudden I hear an advertisement for Dan Pilla's book, How to Get Tax Amnesty. And this is back in 1994, tax season of 94. And I hear that, and I hear the advertisement, and I said, I got to get this book. I got to be able to help my friends get out of this because they could not afford $60,000, because that's what the IRS said that they owed them, is $60,000. So that's what I did. I called up Barnes & Noble. I got the book on order, and I followed it. And I actually got them an offer in compromise before the IRS published an offer in compromise form that they have up on their website now, and before anybody's advertising about it, these offer in compromise mills. And I got them an offer in compromise of $7,000. That they actually could pay over 24 months. And the rest is history. I've heard it said a lot that you're rewarded in public what you do in private. And so what is it that you can actually let us all know that what works for you in private when you're looking to grow or pivot into a new business or start a new business or go out on, you went out on your own just from Deloitte Touche. You decided, I'm not going to work my way up the ladder, and I'm going to open the Green Group.
I think everybody during their lifetime sees things that they say, gee, I wish I could have a better result. I wish I had a better product from it. For instance, Howard Head, okay, was not a very good tennis player. And back in those days, the tennis rackets were all standard size. And he said, why not build a bigger head on the tennis racket so I could play tennis better? So he invented the head racket.
The head tennis racket.
And he then challenge number two was he didn't ski very well. So he came up with the head ski that's bigger than the normal.
Right, right.
Find a problem and then find a solution to the problem. Mrs. Fields' son, okay, couldn't eat regular bread. So she came up with a bread that they could eat and became Mrs. Fields' kind of thing because it solved a problem. Okay. It was an allergy and it solved the allergy problem. Okay. A couple of my students came up with a light bulb that for factories and other things that was four or five times better than any other bulb that was out there, but they couldn't get anybody to buy it.
Right.
because nobody was going to experiment with it. And it came to
Right.
class, and they said, what should we do? I said, offer to install it for nothing
Right.
and then get paid out from the savings. Well, they did that, and Thinklight became a very big success.
So students out of Babson? Oh, wow.
We were sitting around, okay, and unfortunately, a dog died. Okay, one of my partner's dogs died. And we started looking into it, and cancer is the number one killer of dogs and cats. And because it's an awful lot of scraps are in the very inexpensive dog food, cat foods.
Right.
Ding dong. But they're selling for 75 cents to a dollar and a quarter. How much would it cost to have a pure dog food, cat food? About
Right.
$3. Well, who the heck is going to buy a $3 can of dog food, cat food when you can buy one for 75 cents to a dollar and a quarter? And my
Right.
partner was a genius, Bill Bishop, okay? And he says, they're not buying dog food, cat food if they buy our product. They're buying something for a member of the family.
Right.
Suddenly, Blue Buffalo was invented. Find a problem, and then maybe you find a solution. Okay, but there's so you just find a problem first, or find something that you have a passion for. Okay, and then boom, the world will be the path to your door.
That's awesome. So it's really to follow your passion. Or to, if you see a problem in something, don't hesitate to start looking for a solution.
Solution. Yep.
Right. And that's a real joy in life to do that, I think, to look at life that way, because if you just accept things sometimes as they are, and if they're negative, it's, I could not sit back. That's why I love what I do in helping defending taxpayers and solving their tax problems is I just can't sit back and not help them have the best resolution. Is there anything you'd like to say to end the show today?
Yeah, there's one thing to be sitting out there and saying, well, these stories, the one has it, but I'm not sure it can solve my problem. And what's the cost of going to be to ask them a question? Because I'm on your show, and there's so many people on there that are listening and saying, hey, I do have a problem. Can I get it solved? There's no charge for sending me an email. Okay, and saying, I have this problem. I'll give you 15, 20 minutes, okay, for a Zoom call. If I can help you in some way to be successful, and then you turn around and help other people, that's what the whole thing is about. And your show is all about that. So, again, if they want to do that, there's complimentary. Okay, just let's see if we can get you started in the right way. Okay.
I love that. Thank you for your generosity.
Thank you again, and good luck and stay well.
Thank you, Len. You too. This is Patricia Gentile, and we hope you're enjoying the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. Make sure you don't miss a moment by simply subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are also excited to announce that the Fighting the Good Fight podcast is now available on YouTube. Just search Fighting the Good Fight podcast with Patricia Gentile, and while you're there, give us a like. The Fighting the Good Fight podcast is a Park City Productions presentation. Learn more at Park City Productions 06604 on Facebook or Instagram. I'm Patricia Gentile, and we'll see you next time.